Hi, everyone. It's Jim Baikya, and the podcast is Be You, The World Will Adjust. I apologize for sounding a little nasal. As I was just saying to Katie, I was perfectly fine all day. All of a sudden, I had one sneeze. I don't think I have COVID. And I haven't been able to stop sneezing or blowing my nose for the last 4 hours straight. And I have an event that I have to attend. And I'm sure my wife thinks that I'm doing it so that I don't have to go. Anyways, this week I want to talk a couple of things. But one that sort of came to mind and it really struck me about so many other things in our lives. And this time of year, everybody in the financial services industry is getting ready to find out what their bonuses were. And if you'd read anything at all in the newspaper over the last little while, it's been an incredible year in the financial services industry. They've made a shitload of dough, more money than they've ever made. And everyone, like Christmas, has visions of sugar plums dancing in their heads. And it sort of reminded me, because I've talked to a lot of people, like, oh, yeah, my God, it's a huge year. I'm just expecting, you know, like $1 billion or something like that. And it reminded me back quite a long while ago. I don't have to exactly say the number of years. When I used to run the trading room at CIBC World Markets, Wood Gundy, I started this sort of annual Christmas, pre-Christmas ritual, because everyone would start finding out right about now, and they get their checks on the 15th of December. In those days, we actually delivered a check, which was kind of an interesting thing to do, because I liked it. I liked handing someone their bonus check, and I'm opening it up to see if it was what you told them it was. But I used to get on the intercom system, and I'd, can I get everybody's attention, please? And then I used to say to them, I said, I want you to close your eyes. I want you to think about that bonus number that you think you're going to be receiving. And I want you to enjoy a moment of thinking how you'll feel when I or one of your managers tells you that not only have we given you the number that you've been dreaming of, but that we've exceeded your expectations in how much we're going to pay you. And so I said, let's just take a moment in that. Just enjoy and savor that. And so, you know, I'd look over this room of like 500 people and they'd all sort of have their eyes closed. And then I'd say, okay, let's all slowly open our eyes. And that was a lovely dream. And let's get back to reality. I said, so whatever those numbers that you thought you were deserving or expecting, there's not a chance we're ever going to reach that. And we're never going to match what you think you're worth. And the reality is that I don't even know how people come up with the idea of what my bonus should be, unless you're in a direct drive job where you're a salesperson, you're paid on commission, you know exactly how much you're going to make. But when you work for an organization that's salary and bonus, you don't know. But the one thing you do know is whatever the number you think it is, you're always wrong. You're always absolutely wrong. You're never wrong on the downside. It's a shitty year. You think, oh, this is what I'm going to get paid. You're usually pretty right about what you're going to get paid. But you're never right on the upside. And so I was thinking about that because, you know, one of the things that I enjoy most in life is when people tell me about going for a job interview. And I said, well, what's the compensation? And they say the salary is between 125 or 150 or 80 and 100. And I said, well, ask for the top number. And they go, what? And they said, I know, but it's a range. I said, I know it's a range, but why wouldn't you ask for the top of the range and force them to explain to you what the difference is between the top and the bottom number? But then I thought about it. I thought about, do we spend most of our lives being disappointed because our expectations are so high? Not just when it comes to compensation, but when it comes to promotions, when it comes to advancements. Is it because we don't have facts? Is it because we don't actually know, and we haven't actually articulated to the people that we work with what are our expectations? You know, I expect to be promoted in the next 12 months. If I'm not promoted, then I'll take that as a sign that you don't think I'm very good or I'm not good enough. And then you've got to sort of go back and rethink this. And I'm going through this with one of my kids who's going to be up for promotion where he works. And I said, you know, if you get it, it's great. But if you don't, you have to really think about it, right? You have to think about what they tell you why you didn't get it and whether you're willing to do what is necessary to put yourself in that place in another year. In his particular case, the company does it once a year. But I thought about it, and I thought about sort of reflecting back over my lifetime. And one of the things I realized, people are afraid to tell their bosses what their expectations are. And I think it's stupid not to tell people what your expectations are. And I think it sets you up for a situation that is guaranteed to be disappointing. Because, you know, the other side of the coin, I know I've been the other side of the coin, and you actually think you're going to have a conversation with someone about compensation, and you think you're knocking it out of the park for them, and you go and sort of tell them, and then they go, that's it? That's the number? And you go, yeah, isn't that awesome? Like, you know how hard I fought for this number. And you guys are just so far apart from each other. So it's really important for people to start and try. And I know I do this in my coaching practice. It goes back to that truth and transparency part about if you have expectations for compensation, if you have expectations for a timetable for promotion, if you have any expectations about your career, which you, as I've said to you a million times, have to manage yourself, you can't rely upon others to keep track and everything else. And, you know, to be perfectly honest, nobody thinks about compensation until right at the end of the year. They have a pile of money. They're trying to figure out how to spread it out. They're trying to figure out, is this the mean? And do you get 1 + 1 to the mean or 1 - 1 to the mean? And it's not a very scientific process. It's really more of an art than it is a science. But it is important. And I think that if you could actually, as an organization, I actually don't think it's a bad idea. People think that, you know, people would inflate the number. But if people could actually, you know, type in what they think they're worth, at least as an organization, you know how far the distance between truth and reality exists. And in historical terms, you know, I've done a lot of interesting things as it relates to people thinking about compensation. And I remember there was a time when I was at the Bank of Montreal, and I just come from CIBC, and at CIBC as president, I had done all kinds of, I thought, cool and different kinds of surveys of people. And one of the things I did with the management group is I asked them to rank all of their peers from top to bottom. And if we had X amount of dollars, units, how would they distribute the units amongst the peers? And I gave them a category, three categories. One, performance against their own sort of businesses, two, helping others within the group, and then three, adding to the total franchise value of the place. And what was really interesting, and it's always been very interesting to me, because people think that people aren't honest about these things, right? That they just boost for themselves. And there is a bit of that, but that person that boosts for themselves is an outlier. And I had one at the time that he basically said, give everybody nothing, give me everything. But what was really interesting is when the survey came out and I looked at previous quarters of compensation, because at the time they paid on a quarterly basis, the guy who was at the bottom before came out at the top of the survey. So when I told my boss the results, he was like, but he's always the worst paid guy. And I said, yeah. I said, why is that? And he said, I don't know. But when his peers evaluated him, he actually emerged to be at the top. And his peers recognized his value across those three criteria. And what was really interesting for me is when I went and paid him, he was like, I've always been the worst paid. I've always had to complain about where I am in the ranking. And I said, yeah, no, I know. But I said, this is not like I contribute to the evaluation. There were eight people that were contributing. And I've always believed that the truth will come out. If you actually ask people, you truly ask people to evaluate other people, they'll tell you the truth. And that truth and transparency, I think that every job in the world should be public. I think how much every single person, from the janitor to the CEO, well, the CEO is public. But like, why stop it at just the top 8 or 10 people, right? By making everything public, you force the onus on organizations to explain why Katie makes X and Jim makes X plus Y. Why is that? Don't they do the same job? And it's that truth and transparency that forces equality and fairness amongst everybody. So to circle back to the beginning, think about this in not just financial terms, because I like to think of these little lessons or these little vignettes that we have together, and that more than just financial terms, think about an interpersonal expectation. You know, I was having this conversation with my wife, and I'd gone down that road that, you know, people go down, which is, you know, I haven't heard from so-and-so in quite a while. And, you know, I'd done so much for them and so on and so on. And my wife said, well, you haven't called them either. I said, yeah, you're right. And then I sort of said, you know, I haven't called them because I haven't been interested in calling. Maybe they're just not interested in calling me. Regardless of what I've done or what I haven't done, is it any different than the age-old question, life's $64,000 question for every decision you have to make? What's in it for me? What's in it for me to call someone? What's in it for me? I don't mean monetarily, but there are people that I call all the time. I enjoy calling them all the time because I come away from the phone call either not feeling guilty, being happy, funny, a sense of warmth, all kinds of stuff like that. And then there are people that I don't call. And then there's people that don't call me. And so I thought, I shouldn't complain about people that don't call me. I should just recognize that they don't call me because they don't care. And that's okay, because they don't feel anything. They don't need anything. They don't want anything. And the interaction is not important to them. And if I'm true to what I talk about here on a weekly basis, then that should be okay. It should be okay that someone doesn't call me. It should be okay that someone doesn't pay me back, because it doesn't matter to them. So again, back to the expectation theme, I think early on, while I'm thinking about New Year's resolutions, and I know it's only the beginning of December, I think my New Year's resolution is going to be to have zero expectations of anybody. Zero. And I know it sounds, well, it doesn't sound easy. It sounds very difficult. And it probably is very difficult because we're used to setting expectations upon people. You know, they should call us, or they should invite us, or this or that. And the reality is they don't call you, they don't invite you because they don't want you there.
Sounds a bit cynical.
No. It's not a bit cynical. It's not a bit cynical. It's reality. Think about in your own life, Katie. Think about all of the people you know. Every night you sit down, you pick up your phone, you can send a text to whomever you want, you could call whomever you want, right? It's actually quite freeing, you know, as I've been thinking about it today. Just think about how much of our lives is spent with what someone has done or has said or hasn't said or hasn't done. And if you just clear all of that and you say, 2022, I'm going to have no expectation. Someone hasn't called me in a year, 2 years, 3 years, so be it. I haven't called them. So there's been nothing. I haven't missed them. I haven't missed their voice. I haven't missed their humor or their presence or stuff like that. And so I think it's really important to start thinking about, as we get through this Christmas season, who are those people you care about? Who are the people that you want to make an effort to keep in touch with because you have a genuine interest in what's going on in their lives? Regardless of whether they have one of yours or not, don't make it a quid pro quo, but you have a genuine interest. So I started pinning all that down today, you know, and, you know, your first instinct is the group is quite large, right? And then you sort of go, I haven't talked to him in a long time. Geez, I haven't talked to her in 3 or 4 years. And it's kind of like cleaning out your closet, you know. You're cleaning out your closet and you have these clothes and you go, God, I love that suit. And then somebody says, when was the last time you wore it? You know, like, I don't know, 9 years ago type of thing. It's time to let it go, right?
It sounds like you're making a wedding guest list all over again, or you got to, starts big and then you realize the budget and you got to whittle it down.
Exactly. But in this particular case, there is no budget. The budget is your time. So then does that time that you free in your emotions and your brain enable you to enjoy more of the time that you spend with everybody else? And it's a very interesting sort of thread this threat of expectations, right? Because you could sort of think about it not only in terms of work, being honest about expectations. I think in relationships, you know, good relationships, people are honest about their expectations of each other. Relationships in general, nobody's ever honest because they're afraid if they're honest, the person won't like them. But good relationships, people don't sort of wonder whether they're doing something that would piss you off. They know they're doing something that would piss you off, or they know what they would do to make you feel good type of thing. But then even extend it to your kids, you know, like, what are their expectations of your relationship with them? I have, you know, two new grandchildren, and, you know, at a point in time, my kids will be parents of living, breathing, thinking kind of kids, not sort of toddlers like they are, babies. And really being clear about our expectations of relationships, clear about what we expect. And then when we are clear and we have been honest, then we can decide whether we're disappointed. So I want to challenge you to start thinking about your New Year's resolution. And I want you to think about it from your perspective. What are you going to do differently? I don't care if you're going to lose 10 pounds, get a hair transplant, or anything else, but what are you going to do differently to improve your mood, your mental state? Relinquish those relationships that aren't helping you get better. Relinquish that guilt of relationships, and relinquish the fear of not telling people how you really feel. Because at the end of the day, as I always say, people are afraid of getting the answer they don't want. But more often than not, the answer they don't want is the answer that they need. I'm Jim Bakei. The podcast is Be You. And I am sorry that I have a cold and I have this nasal sound to my voice today. Have a great week, everybody. We'll be back soon.